Good morning.
Happy 2019, Rob.
Hey, Rob, I figured you guys would be on early after all the work you did.
Absolutely.
Well, congratulations.
And even more importantly than the work we did on the plan, we're actually executing.
Oh, my God. I'm in shock.
You know, Rob, you learned the secret. If you ever want to get me to do something, tell me I can't.
Well, it's, you know, you're one of, you're only one of 1 million financial advisors out there. There's probably not a million, maybe it's 350,000 that actually have done a business plan this year and are actually going to execute on it. So congratulations.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the pleasantly persistent prod. We need that.
Well, I mean, when you do it, you don't just do it. You go, I've never seen such a detailed plan. So, congratulations. Now,
I had mixed emotions because I knew it was going to be good and lead me to where I wanted to be led and get me to do what I needed to do, but I also knew that we were all providing you plenty of rope to hang us with should we not execute.
Right. You've got a lot here, Rob. I hope you recognize that, right? You're trying to do a lot.
I do, and we're doing it in bite-sized pieces, and so what I've really focused on so far is discovery with existing clients, getting the COI thing up and going, and we've got a couple of prospects that we're working on. So, yeah, it's a lot to do, but it's the plan. It may all be the 2019 plan, but if it takes me 14 months to do it, if this ever all gets executed on, and then we've got all the other, systems and things that everybody else has put in place that will manage and keep these relationships on track, I don't even know where we could go if we do that.
Well, I think it's a good, and your point is a good one. It's a, you could even think of this as a three-year plan. It's very robust, and you can set deadlines for this year to accomplish as part of this overall plan. I would not, you're very ambitious here. So, anyway, so tell me what you've done, actually. I mean, that's what counts, right? Not what you wrote, but what you've done and what you're going to do.
Well, so if you kind of look at, from my standpoint, retain, deepen, and make ourselves more referable, as we had talked about, so much of the 1242 had been executed in the monthly calls, and a significantly disproportionate amount of those had fallen on Sean, which was creating, capacity issues, burnout issues, and all kinds of things. So what we've done is we've identified that I'll do the quarterly meetings and calls for things. So what I'm doing is I'm calling the clients that I have this month, and I'm saying to them that it is very difficult for me to believe that we are entering the last year of the second decade of the 21st century. I still remember worrying about Y2K, 1999, and what we were going to call the aughts. And here I am looking at it, getting ready to be the third century. And that's meaningful in our practice because so many of our clients in this third decade are going to see a number of life events and changes in their circumstances. Maybe they're going to retire. Maybe they're going to start a retirement phase down. Their children are going to get married. Their children are having children. They're becoming great grandparents, grandparents, whatever it is. But what I want to do is make sure that we're entering that decade fully prepared to help them, achieve all their goals, objectives, and really continue to pursue their highest aspirations. So to do that, I would like to identify with you three things that if we could accomplish those with you this year in 2019, that we could come to the end of the year and you would feel that you were more confident, had greater clarity, that we were delivering a higher level of service, that we could do. What are those three things? And so then I have a conversation with them. The conversations are lasting an hour or more. And then what I'm doing is developing a narrative that says, okay, Rob, we talked on the phone. Here's the first objective. Here's what it is that I understood that it was. And I'm very much trying to paint a word picture here, Rob. So I'm not just saying you want to travel, but we did this with one of the prospects. We set her travel budget at $31,300. And Sean said, where the hell did you come up with that number? And I said, well, I know these people. I know they like to go to Europe once a year. They go to California, to Santa Barbara once a year. And they go to New York a couple times. So let's say when they go to Europe, the airline tickets for two people is $7,000. Let's say they stay in a hotel room, cost them $500 a night for a week, so that's $3,500, worth $10,500. Let's say that they spend $300 a night on food, or $300 a day on food, that puts us at $2,100. And then they spend $1,000 in museum shows, whatever it is. So that's, you know, $13,000. Let's say that the Santa Barbara trip costs $4,000 less because the airline's cheaper. Then let's say that the New York trips cost $6,000 less because they're taking the train. You work all that out, $31,300. So when you say to the client, you can just go to Europe, and here's how you're going to live when you're in Europe. You can go to Santa Barbara, here's how you live in Santa Barbara. You can spend a total of a week in New York City, here's how you're going to live in New York City, and this is what you're going to want to do. That is much more powerful to them than, oh, yeah, we got a travel budget in here. So I'm trying to draw, to paint these word pictures of what it is they want to accomplish and why they're important. The next thing is, what are the next steps? The next part is, what is the timeline for execution on the steps? The third or the fourth line is, what, if anything, do we need from you? And then we do that for those three steps. And then that's going to be what my job is in between the monthly calls to do the, you know, the planning with Sean, Claudia, whoever it is, to do the work and to move these things along. And in my call today, one of our clients said, I'm a 45-year surf fisherman, but I want to convert to fly fishing, but I don't really know how to do that, but I really want to do that. When we were talking about what he was going to do at his time. And I said, well, you know, coincidentally, we're going to have a meeting later today with one of my favorite clients in the world, somebody I've done business with for 25 years, who's an avid fly fisherman. He is the exact opposite. You know, our client that's going to be a fly fisherman, worked for wildlife, the U.S. Wildlife Federation, whatever it is, the fishing game, and is super knowledgeable about all things in nature and all those things, and wants to learn to fly fish. Tom, the guy I want to connect him with to talk to him about fly fishing, spent his whole life in corporate America as a consultant flying around on jets, and now he's bought farms and is becoming kind of a gentleman farmer and a fly fisherman and more of an avid outdoorsman. So I said, you teach him about the outdoors, he'll teach you about fly fishing, it'll be great. So that's that kind of trying to deepen, connect more referability. Then I got two appointments set right now with COIs. One of them I executed on and had a meeting, and I think it went really well. I think we can move that needle along. And then we've got a client, a prospect that we're working on who came out of one of our dinner meetings or one of our dinner events just before the end of the year. That's about, what is that, $4.5 million?
Yep.
$4.5 million. Then we've got another client who we've got a bond portfolio that doesn't really do anything for us that's $3 million. But he got 10-5 at Goldman. I went out and met with him in December sometime, talked to him about how we would do things differently. The guy that he works with here at the bank has been talking to him. A couple of the businesses he thought were going to really pan out, make him a ton of money, have kind of gone up in smoke. So I told the banker, I think it's time we go out and talk to him and say, listen, you know, this portfolio of yours is invested like a guy who's going to create wealth everywhere else, which puts a lot of pressure on you to make every business super successful. Why would we not combine these, take this $13 million, grow it to $20 million over the next 7 or 8 years, and then tell you you can draw $800,000 a year off of this for the rest of your life? It would take some pressure off of you. It would keep your wife from being up all night pacing the floors every time you give her bad news about one of the businesses. And if you're right and we're wrong and you're worth, you know, $100 million and all these other things anyway, okay, give the $800,000 a year to charity. So we've got about a $20 million pipeline right now. Now, it's only two deals, but it's still a $20 million pipeline.
Yeah, and you know, you're going to generate this much activity, you're going to have really, really good things happening. And I like the organization. I like the three-question thing. Did you get that from Richard?
No, I just know that he always likes three. He says things come in three because he says the first one a lot of times is a throwaway. The second one gets closer, and he said frequently the third question you ask somebody, you always get close to home. So I, you know, some people say why three, and I just say, you know, if you, you show me somebody with 20 priorities and I'll show you somebody with no priorities, I know I can get three things done, so let's get those done. If we knock those out, we'll add another one.
Right. No, I like it. I like it a lot. And, you know, one of the things that I've used that three, and I think he's right on the three questions business. I think that's really good. So excellent. Yeah, I really like it. I think you're going to end up with some really interesting discussions and some, you know, those are much more in depth than the average financial advisor even considers, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so, all right, so I think what you're doing is you're going after the most effective part of your marketing plan first, centers of influence. Then
right.
Your existing, then next is your existing client, right?
Right.
Okay.
Is that what you're going to focus on for the time being? Or are you moving the whole plan forward, or how are you going to continue?
So I'm moving the whole plan forward, Richard. What I did, I don't know when I did this, but what I said, Richard, I apologize, but I guess we're down Richard instead, Richard. The other thing that I've done is that I've really looked at our market here. And, you know, it's interesting to me. I thought about the markets around the country and, you know, I thought, you know, if you're in Silicon Valley, all the money's in technology. If you're in Hollywood, it's in TV production, games production, so on and so forth. If you're in Houston, it's in oil. If you're in New York, it's finance and some legal. If you're in Washington, D.C., which is the richest place in America, it's one thing. It's lawyers and lawyers functioning as lobbyists. And that's great news for us because we've got a couple of very large lawyers. And so I started to take apart the local office of Skadden Arps. And so we've got two partners at Skadden. One of them is the head of the antitrust division. So what I did is I went through the D.C. partners at Skadden, and I looked where they went to school, what their backgrounds were, what kinds of law they practiced, and so on and so forth. Then what I'm going to do is put our guy, Steve, at the center of that. Steve, in addition to being the head of antitrust, is also fairly active apparently in the life science areas. And I know where he went to school and start to look at these other partners and say, okay, what commonalities are there? Which of these guys practice in the same general areas? Which of these guys went to the same schools? Which of these guys are kind of the same age? So on and so forth. And then try to identify a group of these folks that I want to do business with. And I've also looked at who reports up to Steve throughout the country in antitrust. So what I want to be able to do is to get to the point that I can be very acutely tuned in to, and ask some questions to try to fill in my knowledge base a bit more of these things with Steve and some of the other partners, and then be able to say to Steve, you know, Steve, we really enjoy working with you, and frankly, you know, I'd like to think that we do a good job. I'm not going to say frankly, I'd like to think, and I think that we do a good job with handling attorneys and unique needs and things that they have. Given that we, you know a number of folks in this area and that we've created a team around ourselves now that give us the bandwidth to grow a little bit with the right kind of people, I really thought about the fact that what I really like to do is do business with some more folks like you. So what I'd like to ask you is if you were in my position and you wanted to start to talk with some more attorneys about what they need and whether or not there's an opportunity for us to help them, and I'm just to say that I said, you know, in the life science areas, what advice would you give me about how I might go about that? And he may say, I don't have any idea, that's your job, figure it out yourself, or he may say, I would do this or I would do that. And my attitude is, I ask him that twice. And if he tells you to go pound sand twice, then he's not a guy that's going to help connect me, and he's not a guy who's going to help, you know, introduce me to some of these people, you know. And so I just, you know, if work comes to work, I got a cell phone, I'll pick them up and call.
All right. Just some general advice on that, all right?
I think
it's good, and you're using the advice model. And that's, by the way, giving credit where credit is due, that is Larry Biederman. I think Richard probably stole that from Larry. And I did too, but I give Larry credit.
Richard doesn't give anybody. Richard gives him and God credit.
No, he gives no one credit. He stole all my stuff, and then he does not give me any credit for it. But that's okay. I give him credit on things that he comes up with, like I said, the three question idea. I think it's, and he's really smart and has good ideas. But there's nothing wrong with giving other people credit. You know, you don't diminish yourself by doing that. Anyway, so my only suggestion would be just make it simpler and shorter. Okay. You don't need to explain the world to him. You just simply say, you know, I really enjoyed doing business with you and a couple of your colleagues. I think it makes sense to me. I'm thinking about developing a practice centered around attorneys. What do you think? Do you think that's a good idea? And he can be very helpful at that point. See, he's going to be able to give you some good feedback. Well, it used to be good, but we don't make any more money and make money anymore. You know, like with the doctors, a lot of doctors would not recommend that. Okay? So he'll probably say, no, I think it's a really good idea. And then just keeping it simple, you simply say, okay, Rick, you know this market a lot better than I do or ever will. How would you suggest that I go about that? Okay, so it's just keep every, you don't need to tell him everything about everything. Just get to the point and get him talking as much as possible. He who talks loses.
Yep.
So try and get him. And I think that's your strength is your knowledge. One of your challenges is, I think, you explain everything in way too much detail.
Perfect.
Okay, so I just keep shorter, simpler, get to the point, get them talking.
So kind of pretend I have a limited IQ and vocabulary like Michael.
Okay.
All right, good. That's good advice. I like that much better. Much better approach.
Yeah, it's just really simple. I'm thinking about building my practice around attorneys. What do you think? Think that's a good idea? Yes. If you were me, how would you go about it? I mean, it's that simple.
Yes. 30 words.
Right. Okay, good. So that's your niche. That's your niche marketing and a good solid start. And I think you got a very good idea in terms of niche. They're all qualified. Everybody in the group is qualified. You're already doing it and you're already good at it. You speak the language of your niche. And that's important.
And okay. Here's where we've got great intel into that area, because we had dinner with one of the clients the other night who told us that their regulatory guys, the guys renegotiating all these contracts and dealing with all the regulatory changes, are just making obscene amounts of money right now. So I said, all right, well, as we look at practices, groups, that's a group to go after.
Right. And the good news is, as much as we bitch about government, It's a growth industry. I mean, it doesn't seem to matter now which administration is there. No one can rein in government. So it's going, you know, go for it. Take advantage.
It's a $7 trillion ATM 5 miles from our door.
Yeah. So what else? Should we hear from your associates here?
Yeah, absolutely, because I think that Sean and Claudia have done a really good job of creating structures, accountability. I am embarrassed to say I wanted to go the whole 30 days and never miss a daily debriefing, and I sat down at lunch yesterday, and my lunch guest was there, and I said, oh, damn. And they said, look, is this the wrong time? I said, no, I wanted to call into this thing, and I missed it. So, but, you know, this is all just theory along the way. If they don't make sure that I'm doing more than just out there making promises, that stuff's really getting executed and we're delivering what we say.
Well, good. So let me hear from them and how they think things are going.
Yeah, Rob, this is Sean. One of the pieces we talked about by the last call or the last couple of calls is that while we had felt that we implemented the Supernova program as it relates to the client conversations, we didn't implement the communication level appropriately with the team. And right. So Rob, we have reinstituted all of that. So we do have the daily check-in meeting. We had it right before we hopped on with you. We have rearranged the time of day in which we do that. We typically find that we eat lunch together, a lot of the time. So that's one of the other reasons. We're thankful that we were able to reschedule our set time that we had with you around the noon area. So it really just works. We find it works much better that 12 to kind of 1, there is some downtime within the practice as a whole, rather than, what we had previously had at, say, 9 or 10 in the morning. This just worked a lot better. So we've done a much better job of sticking through that. Additionally, Claudia, Michael, and Elvis have made individual folders for everyone on the team so that we can now have the monthly individual meetings to address everyone's personal and business goals for the month, for the quarter, for the year. Additionally, continue to go through that of what are our weekly objectives. So we have that meeting on Mondays as well, making sure that we're coordinating and then following up at the end of the week on Fridays to make sure that we either began, accomplished, or the goals that we set forth are in progress.
Excellent. So what's your take on how well you're able to stick with this now?
Yeah, I mean, so far, Rob, it's been, where are we? What's the, about,
16 days in.
Yeah, 2 weeks in. So far, it's working. I think just also in terms of organizationally getting stuff to the client, getting info, follow-up back to the client, seems like that's been working well, over the course of the last 2 weeks. I think we all hold each other accountable and hold our feet to the fire and continue this. It'll work well. When we've got 5 people looking at each other saying ready to get together, makes it a lot easier than maybe one person saying, let's get this done right now.
Right. What do you think have been the benefits of it?
I think organizationally, the roles and responsibilities have been divvied up appropriately, and it's allowing everyone to, what they've been charged with is allowing everyone to get done what they were allocated to do. And there's, I think it's still in progress, but there's a little ambiguity as to what everyone's doing and an understanding that this is all to accomplish an end goal and an objective. And, divvying up those, marketing, growth, leadership, implementation, brand management, all of those pieces I think are going to start to come together as a result.
Do you feel an increase in productivity, or are you still too early?
I would say yes.
I would say yeah.
We already see it.
Yeah.
Let me hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the communication, the follow-up to the client, I think it's been much more in-depth just in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, just clearly articulating everybody's individual goals in terms of the 5-star model, Rob, I think has kind of allowed us to, set, really focus on that and just going through the practice of articulating it and setting goals. And I kind of look around and everybody is productive. you know, there's not a lot of downtime anymore. I think we purposely take some downtime in the middle of the day to get together. But everybody's, you know, I feel like things are happening that haven't happened in a long time. So I think it's helped a lot.
Articulate those things that are happening that didn't happen.
Just, you know, we're getting much better with the follow-up, you know, rotating calls amongst Rob and Sean, amongst monthly and quarterly, making sure we're closing the loop. Elvis is here. You know, he's fully licensed and up and running, so he's helping with a lot of the prep. The prep is really being done well. You know, we're preparing ahead of time with meetings. For the prospect meetings or client meetings, we're actually getting together and discussing things, and we're all on the same page when we walk into a room. You know, from my perspective, portfolios, we actually have models. We are moving in that direction. We're, you know, planning client events, client birthday cards, just a lot of things. I think you said it earlier, the activity amongst the team was lacking. There's just a lot of activity right now, and I think it's going to be good in the long term.
Rob, if I could just articulate this in a 30,000-foot level, here's what I will tell you is, Sean and I walked out of a prospect meeting early in the year, and when we walked out, we said, God, and Sean looked at me and said, God, I forgot how good we are at this. He said, that was great. That's done, man. I said, yeah, you know, we really are good at this. I said, you know, I forgot that this is the environment in which you and I are the definition of one and one is much more than two. It's like three, four, five. What I think happens is, in this format, though each of us cumulatively are much more than five, we're more like 7, 8, 9, 10, because nobody's having me spend as much time running around to pick up behind me to try to figure out, well, what the hell is he going to get this done? Is this not going to get done? You know, and I'll just figure myself out, and you know, maybe it's in other places, but we're just so much more focused, we're so much more aware, we're mindful, we're executing, it changes attitudes a lot. And so, to me, what I see is, when I walked out of that meeting, and Sean and I were so struck by, again, the synergies and the strength of us together, and being able to accomplish together what neither of us could ever accomplish alone, I think you then multiply that by 2.5 to represent five people instead of two, and that's what I see happening.
Well, I heard confidence too in Claudia's voice and Sean. I think you guys, it sounds like you're more confident and more proud of what you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I think separating the day-to-day kind of running of the business, which has to happen in any business, from these bigger picture kind of five-star model goals, it is what helps, because there's really no question as to, you know, what everybody should be doing when there is downtime. So, you know, two weeks in, I think we're all hopeful that we can keep this up throughout the whole year, and it keeps getting easier. But I think we're off to a good start.
Yeah, let me say one thing. I do think that we should prepare ourselves for the fact, though, like if we were all alcoholics or on a diet or something else, we're going to fall off the wagon at some point. And I think we need to acknowledge that right now, because I think it makes it easier to fall off. And ironically, it's interesting. I talked to somebody once who was an addiction expert when I was in a bike camp a couple months ago. And he said that he always knows that the potentiality of somebody's long-term sobriety goes off the charts once they've fallen off the wagon and gotten back on. He said, if somebody's been off on the wagon for 6 years and never fallen off, I'm like, they'll probably make it. He said, if you've been on, you know, you've been on the program for 3 years and you fall off the wagon for a couple of days or a week, and then you get back on, he says, their probability of long-term success more than doubles. So I just think we need to be realistic and mindful of that, and that a stumble or a mistake isn't fatal, and it's not failure, and it doesn't mean we're off the rails. It means we made a mistake. We stumbled. We stubbed our toe. Get back up and get back to work.
Well, and the key is, who is going to ring the bell? You know, how do you know? You personally know you're off, but you know, does anybody else know you're off? That's the key. How long will it take you to identify that you didn't work out? Is it going to take a day or a week or a month? And how are you going to do that?
I think we need to articulate and develop some kind of buddy system or something.
But, yeah, and we have started, Rob. We're trying to, and again, so it's, you know, 2 weeks here, but I do think that with everybody setting weekly goals and then checking in, that, you know, that will help. We've kind of created some tracking mechanisms where, you know, we're going to put goals up on the wall where they're visible. And I think if we can keep the level of activity and engagement up as a team, we should be able to identify when individuals run into hard times, and it'll just kind of be on us to try to get them back on. But
we are, Rob. One thing we did tell management that we needed in order to get is that we had to have an office, a second office, Claudia was in a cubicle, a third office, excuse me, and they said, what do you need it for? And we said, command and control.
Okay. Well, here's the game, guys. Visibility, accountability, timeliness, those are all critical, all right? So think of yourself as a squadron that's looking, a squadron of fighter pilots that are looking to make sure that you don't have an accident and you're performing at peak performance. So let's play your Blue Angels. The idea is every day you look at each other's eyes and say, are you ready to fly? Are you ready to fly? Are you committed to excellence today? Or are you tired? You're worn out? Do you need a day off? What do you need today? No, I'm ready to go. I feel great. I love what we're doing. I'm good. And then you track it, and it's got to be visible. You got to have some visibility in the tracking. Because that's as you walk by, you see the board, you know what your goal is, and you get it done before the Friday meeting. I like what you're doing a lot. Setting the goals on Monday, accountability on Friday. Good. It's a variation on the game board, but it's still good. It's good. But, you know, you got to give it up to each other that you're going to allow each other to hold yourselves accountable. But it's easier if it's a board and you're writing it on the board yourself, and then you're talking about it at the end of the week about yourself, not about somebody else. This is me. This is my goal. This is what I wrote. This is what I did. Then it's not one person holding the team accountable. Yes, you do have to have the leader. You know, Sean, whoever is the leader has to be the ultimate guy to blow the whistle. Okay? But you want to try and set up the system so he doesn't have to blow the whistle.
Right.
Okay? So I like what you're doing, and frankly, I don't think you're biting off too much. Rob, I was worried looking at the business plan that you were going to make yourself crazy trying to do everything. But I don't think you are. I think you're doing it just fine. I think you're breaking it down into pieces and, you know, having a few centers of influence that you're developing in one niche, great. Go for it. That's perfect. That's about what you can do. And they're good. They're solid ideas. And just looking at the leadership piece, it looks like you've got accountability built into it, which is great. Go ahead.
One thing I wanted to just say, because I think it really speaks back to your getting bored and giving in that, excuse me, is one of our oldest and biggest clients about 10 days ago was talking to me on the phone and said, Sean, I'd like to talk to him. I said, yeah, absolutely. So I gave Sean the phone and went back to what I was doing. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to talk to Sean about taking Michael to lunch. Now, Sean and I have worked for this guy for 20 years. He's never taken either one of us to lunch. But Michael had helped him settle his father's estate. And the client said to me later after he talked to Sean, there's no way in the world I could have done it without Michael. He made it so easy. He just, you know, it was the kind of service that I want, you know. Wells Fargo is always telling me what it means to be a private bank client. But my experience is anytime I get away from you guys, things just go to hell. And he said, you know, Michael was the absolute antithesis of that and did an extraordinary job. And I wanted to personally thank him for that. So I just wanted to let you know that, you know, as far as to get you bored and doing the right thing and going out of the way for clients, that's absolutely something that Michael has done historically. And I think it's even dialed it up a notch in his role that he has now. And so I think that's, in my mind, the biggest win of the year so far.
Congratulations. That's what they, you know, that's what they write stories about. It's wonderful. Claudia, why don't we spend a minute on your investment process and your service model? What did you learn from it, and what do you plan on doing differently?
So I think on both fronts, it really just comes down to better tracking, better processes, and more accountability. So we talked a little bit about the service model. I went through and I built a system again to make sure that we can stick to the rotation that we've started to implement between, you know, the members of the team and the quarterlies. We actually have a, you know, wall-sized calendar that's visible for everybody on the team to help us to stay on track with that. And I think it is a repeatable process that we can do month in and, you know, every month, every quarter. And, you know, just trying to get back to doing some of the little things on the calls, like the 24-month calendar, we're, you know, really trying to have topics that make sense, that are timely, and that it's repetitive so that, you know, as Elvis is preparing for the meetings, it's not taking up a whole lot of his time. We're changing the way that we look at performance with clients and just making everything, consistent. It's just consistency across the board and just having a plan for the month. With the investments, sure. I mean, we've really taken that up a notch. We have 6 models that are now up and running. You know, they're a variation of or 2 or 3 that feed into them, but just building out risk metrics. I've, you know, built a board on the Bloomberg that's visible for everybody on the team so everybody can kind of see what the models look like on a daily basis. And we're, you know, on the monthly calls, Sean and I are working on a process to really get everybody aligned, because I do think that once we get the model tightened up, it's going to free up more of our time to do some of the more added value things with clients and not have to spend so much time, you know, focusing on whether or not they're aligned with the models. So the day that everybody is kind of in the model, I think will be the day that we can take it up a notch as well. You know, we're working on transitioning the book into our various discretionary platforms, and that's on track to be done by the end of the month. And just working to have ongoing monitoring, you know, with the models and any deviations between individual client accounts on performance allocation, risk measures, et cetera. So we're building out a much more robust process than we've ever had. I think we're still kind of in the beginning stages, but I think it's going well. I think by the end of the first quarter, we will have made a lot of progress in terms of existing accounts.
It's really good. I might make a couple of suggestions. One of them is to make sure you get the enthusiastically endorsed model as a part of your agenda for every month, so you guys agree that this month we're going to ask about CPAs, and in February we're going to ask about attorneys, estate planning attorneys, and then in March, we're going to ask about residential realtors. And then, you know, April, we'll ask about commercial realtors. And May, we'll ask about business brokers. Interesting question. You know, not everybody you'd ask about a business broker, but if it's a small business, you should say, you know, can you enthusiastically endorse your business broker? I don't have one. Have you ever thought about it? No, because I'm not selling my business. Have you heard of any good one? No. Okay, let's just keep that in mind. In the future, we're going to have a list of enthusiastically endorsed business brokers, and when you get to the point where you feel like you want to talk about it, we'll have somebody that we can call on. How's that sound? Good. Okay. So what you're doing is you're really educating yourself on what your clients have and what they don't have. And then what they're going to need, not just today, but in the future. If every, you know, we're planning for everyone's retirement, but we're not planning on the business retirement. And so that should be a part of your planning process. How are we going to transition the business, and is it going to involve a business broker? Or is it going to be a family transition, and so forth? So it's just a good thing, and that I would put that into your category of implementation of the planning process through execution. Now, coordinating the education for the next month, really good idea and excellent, you know, getting that on the calendar, getting everybody behind that can be a big part. As you guys get organized, getting yourself organized around an initiative to concentrate on a particular important topic like long-term care or insurance, insuring whatever, car thing, et cetera. Mortgages. Those are things that take a little preparation, not a lot. You're good at it, I'm sure. But just that kind of education planning will make your performance that much better, and you'll get extra productivity out of everybody on the team. So I throw those two things in there, and just a tip of the hat. Really good, guys. This is the best work I've seen in a long time. So remember, when you get this all up and running, one of the ways to keep yourself on track, you know, the Blue Angels would never be the Blue Angels unless they performed in front of a crowd, right? So you need to perform in front of a crowd. That will make you better and will keep you on track and keep you focused on being the best. So set it up so that you meet with your next center of influence. Remember, when we're meeting with a center of influence, right, we're developing a new one or even existing one, we're really reintroducing ourselves. We go to their shop, we learn what they do, and then they come and they learn what we do. Well, think about you guys standing up and articulating what you just did for me. You articulate for them what it is that you do and what makes you guys unique. I mean, it would be amazing. So your 5-star model is how you run the meeting, and they'll be blown away. And you will, I mean, think about convincing. We're wondering, how do we develop more centers of influence and better introductions? Well, by God, educate them what you're actually doing. They're going to, who wouldn't introduce? If you're really doing this and you're doing it as well as you're talking about, who would not introduce you? I mean, that would be the question. Why wouldn't they introduce you? And then one of the things to do is to do one of your shows in front of management. Okay? When you feel like you've got this thing really rolling, then bring management in and say, you know, we would like to do a little bit of a dress rehearsal in front of you. It's not really a dress rehearsal. It's a full performance, but you can say it's a dress rehearsal so they feel like they're engaged in helping you. And say you'd just like to present this. And then and just ask for their feedback at the end. You know, we'd like your feedback at the end. So, you know, if you don't mind, take a few notes and think about things as we present it, how we could do it better, et cetera. They'll be blown away. And management can be a great source of introductions, as you well know. So just a couple of suggestions. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Very impressive, guys. This is how we'll, I mean, this is going to be a good year for me as your coach, because you've given me a lot of good material to work with here and ability to help you, and you've given yourself tremendous ability to help yourself. So a great conversation today. My best by far in years. So congratulations.
Hey, Rob, one of the things I would share with you, if you're talking to other people, I don't know if anybody else would echo this, but these wall-sized calendars that Claudia has in the office is a genius idea, because I'll walk in there and you just look at those, like, oh, man, I got a lot of calls today. How am I doing? Am I on track? Is this or that? Or if I'm in there and I think about lingering a little bit longer and I look at there at all the stuff that's got to get done, I'm like, oh, my God, there's a lot of stuff here we got to work on. So there is, I know it's great to have all this stuff on Excel and go paperless and everything else, but in the same way Sean loves your system because he loves the old school files, that old school calendar on the wall with everything on there, I think that is, for me, it's a huge communication tool and keeps me tuned into the job at hand, how much it's going to be to do, what everybody's got to do, and also what it reminds me of. Yes, Claudia color-coded everything, so I think, you won't believe this, the dispatchers had to be green. But, so I'm blue, but what it shows me is if blue breaks down, this whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket in a big hurry.
Yep. Really good. Claudia, would you mind taking a picture of that and sending it to me?
Sure.
And if you have the game board or any other boards that you're using to keep track of this stuff, something visible on the wall, take a picture of that and send that to me, too.
Okay. No problem.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'm meeting with a tech. The reason I'm mentioning that is I'm meeting with a techie guy, our techie guy, who's been very successful with a couple of ventures. And he's got plenty of money right now, and he wants to do something with Supernova to make it more, go to another level. And he's a guy we hired to do our websites and things like that. Well, he turns out he went to the West Coast and got involved in one of that automatic signature company, whatever it is, and made a lot of millions and things. So he's interested. And I'm just kind of curious as to if, he's got an idea. I don't think it's a really particularly good, helpful idea in terms of technology for us. To me, what he could help with would be keeping track of prospects, but maybe Salesforce does that already, or any thoughts that you would have that if you had a magic wand and had a techie guy to involve, that was willing to invest, a reasonable amount of money, what they could do to make things more efficient for you?
Two things that I think. First of all, I do think there's still a need for a sales process out there. Salesforce, you effectively have to become almost an admin kind of person to run it, and it takes on a life of its own. Claudia, we tried it, and it was just overwhelming. We threw up our arms and said it's too much. So I do think there's an opportunity there. What I would love to be able to do someday, Rob, is to enter in everything I know about my client. Steve Sunshine's an Annie Trust lawyer. His kids went to UVA. He lives here. He likes exotic cars. He races sailboats. He works at Scadden Arts. He worked at the DOJ. He lives in New York. Michael just said an electronic order. Then, this guy. And a system that could go through and look for connectivity or commonalities and those kinds of things, and we say all of a sudden, oh, my God, both these guys are sailboat racers, or both these guys drive this kind of car. All four of these people's kids went to UVA. A way to see all that, and if I didn't go out and look at prospects, that would also show me circles where I may say, well, it's interesting. I noticed that when I looked at Scadden that like 70% of the partners went to 7 schools. So that tells me, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to look at guys that went to these law schools. And one of them shocked me. Like, I knew that Georgetown and Harvard, but a huge number of them went to GW.
Yeah.
So being able to see relationships and see more deeply and see things that aren't immediately obvious would be, I think that'd be a great thing to do. And it doesn't seem to me like it should be that hard. It's too hard for me, but for somebody who knew what they were doing, I mean.
Right. Okay. So one would be the interconnect, having a way of identifying all the different qualities of a client or a prospect or all those. Okay. So and what was the first one?
I think that there's a need for a scaled down sales processing system that takes into account a guy or a team like ours that's going to have maybe 40 prospects in the pipeline at any given time. Salesforce is made when, you know, you've got 94 people calling on Cisco. And I gave up on it. Claudia is pretty technologically proficient. Me giving up wasn't a surprise, but I think Claudia used through your arms if you said this is too much.
Yeah, and what we've always wanted, Rob, is something that does a better job of tracking you through the sales process for an individual prospect. And somehow, like, we always kind of draw it as a funnel from the time that they enter the pipeline to the close, but something to kind of help you guide you through there and help put targets and goals. And as Rob said, because we're not dealing with that many, we do it basically through Excel. It ends up being the best way to do a lot of stuff, but something that could help you through the entire process and just better identify, you know, maybe like a client dashboard where everything is in one place would be helpful.
That's what I said, too. I thought that was the big one, because I've got these insurance agents are really good at that. They put in a prospect into the beginning of the funnel, and they know exactly when that prospect is going to come out with how much. And they need that because they live on current revenues. I mean, they don't, it's all, you know, you eat what you kill. And so they need to keep that funnel going. We don't need it as much. We should have it, but it's not like life or death. So the average financial advisor has virtually no funnel. They've got prospects that they sort of keep track of, and that's about it. So it's not, and I don't hear people saying, oh, Salesforce does that great for me. That's working great. So I think there is still a need out there for, like you said, 40 prospects that have the funnel that you can kind of keep track of. And then I like the connectivity between all your clients. What do they have in common? Commonalities, you know, the niche kind of niche identifiers, and then helping you to then incorporate that with your prospects, so that you instantly know the 8 or 10 people that are really interested in fly fishing, and so you can immediately send out an email that, you know, that this fly fishing seminar is going on, right?
Exactly.
And I think
it would help us to see, you know, time would be able to say, why does it always get stalled out at this part of the sales funnel or this part of the pipeline? I also think if people continue to go through the funnel, you could project outcomes based upon two things. One, what stage they're at in the funnel, and B, what was the velocity with which they got there?
Yeah, what's your closure rate? You know, you have, you know, exactly how many prospects do you need, how many suspects do you need to develop, how many prospects to close the people, and what is your time frame for doing that? Nobody knows that. Okay, no. And that we should all know that. That's just business. You wouldn't run a business if you didn't know that. But we do all the time. So I like it. Good. Thanks for the feedback. Good job.
All right, sir. Thank you for your time. We'll talk to you in January.
Congratulations. Thanks. Bye-bye.